Pat St. John, that is me, and I have Pat Murphy here with the Aviation Weather Service, Weather Center, I should say. But we're just hanging out here. The air show had just been delayed a little bit, but you get to listen to us just a little bit longer. Lucky for you.
Can't get enough weather information.
No, of course you cannot. I mean, we're holding off a little bit, but I think they're probably waiting for that storm off to our east just a little bit to get farther away so they can make that pattern a little bit larger instead of push them through the thunderstorm with some of these small airplanes. Wouldn't be too fun to go through.
Absolutely.
Now, actually, I should say with these smaller airplanes, I'm sure that, you know, they get a little bumpier comparison to the big ones, but is there certain statistics, or I should say rules, that this type of airplane can't fly through here, but these other guys can, or is it just up to the pilot, really?
Well, you know, the military will make forecasts specific to their aircraft type. At the National Weather Service, we don't really have that luxury because we've got every aircraft as our customer.
Yeah.
So when we're issuing airmets, it's kind of a, people will say it's over forecast sometimes, but that's because we're forecasting for every aircraft. So the guy in the Cessna and the guy in the 747 are using the same airmets to make their decisions. And obviously, 747 is not going to feel some moderate turbulence the same way a Cessna would. And along that lines, it's the experience that a pilot has too. If someone's got a lot of hours, even in a small plane, and have felt these bumps before, around the mountains, it's a little bit more common. In the summertime, you get some convective thermos, and those can cause a little turbulence. An experienced pilot will know this and be familiar with it and not be too upset about it. Someone who doesn't have as much experience, and especially in a small aircraft, that can really throw them off, and it can be really a scary situation. So it'd be nice if we had the resources and the mission charge to go out and forecast for each aircraft category, at least, or if not every type. But there's so many different airframes out there, you just really can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't do that.
You know, different weights, different categories, and especially with the experimentals and the super lights. You don't want to be pushing a super light through in anything that a 747 is like, this is easy, you know,
A super light gets in a wake vortex from a Sparrow, and it could cause some pretty good turbulence.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, getting too close to a 747, just blow it up.
There you go. Yeah.
No fun. No fun there. Yeah.
But well, another thing with the different airframe types, which is really more significant, is icing. Icing is really affected by the shape of the wing, by the shape of the aircraft, and a lot of different planes can fly through the same area and not get any icing at all. And one guy with just the right shape of wing or plane or combination thereof is going to get ice going pretty quick. And to try to manage that and to keep people appraised of where the hazard is and without being overly cautious or giving too many false alarms is a big challenge we face.
Yeah, I gotcha. You know, especially, you know, as long as they keep along with the flight rules, they should decently be okay, except for the turbulence up high, as long as the flight rules are give or take. The flight rules kind of give you an idea of what kind of weather you'd be flying into. You know, you have the IFR is not as easy to fly through as almost just clear sky at all completely.
Absolutely, absolutely. And trying to distinguish between IFR and MVFR when you're a forecaster, that's a pretty tough call. You know, the ceiling height of just 100 feet, you know, can put you in a different category, and not knowing where the tops of those clouds are or where the clear sky is, could really get a pilot into a dangerous situation pretty quick.
Now, are the ceiling levels, or are to find the ceiling level, they usually use METAR on the ground. Is that correct?
Yep.
And sometimes you usually get those METARs that always give you the random spit out errors and everything. Is that still an issue?
No, I think they've got those fixed. We've been working with the CASOS system that's producing those METARs. We've got a good 10-15 years experience with those now. Some of the algorithms and the communications issues have been worked out, so they're pretty reliable these days.
Now, the ASOS system, there's the two different categories. There's the one with the weather sensor and one without there. I should say the weather, it just describes the weather.
Yeah.
And the one without, there's I think still the majority of them are without, though, if I remember, in most of the areas.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The ones without, can they still see the ceiling?
No, those aren't. Well, some of them have solometers, and some of them have present weather sensors, as you were mentioning. It's just, it depends on the category of airport and what's been put in there. A lot of that's decided by the FAA in coordination with the Weather Service, and you know, there's unfortunately the resources aren't limitless, so you know,
yeah, exactly.
You want to put the best state of the art observing system at every single airport, and really what's out there is pretty reliable.
Yeah.
But an airport that's just going to land, that's a grass field, that's going to land a couple small planes a day. It doesn't have a present weather sensor.
It's got the windsock just hanging out.
Windsock, yeah. They're always trying to add more and more to that, so you know, it's always a work in progress. We'll never be at an end state in anything with aviation, I don't think. That's the environment here at EAA. It's always about pushing the envelope, trying new things, new ways of designing aircraft. We do the same. The FAA does the same thing, and we do the same thing in the National Weather Service, trying to find new ways to communicate, to provide information, to measure things. And there goes the Ford Triumph motor.
Yeah, exactly. Making some noise, but I'm sure you know it would be fun up there for them right now. You know, the ceiling's nice and high. And not too much sun, so you can look straight out down instead of squinting through the sky. But now I got kind of lost my track here. We were talking before with you know, the some of the new products that you know, you were saying how you know, they're designing new things with the FAA and everything. Do you guys usually work together and put together new products to try out, test?
Yeah, the Weather Service and the FAA have a really interesting relationship.
It's
a good relationship, and,
good
it is interesting, absolutely. The FAA sets requirements for aviation weather products for the Weather Service. So they talk to pilots, they talk to airlines, they talk to controllers and dispatchers and find out what it is that's needed. They work through ICAO, through the international community, and find out what the international standards are. And then they come to the Weather Service and they say, this is what people want, this is what we need, these are the types of decisions we're trying to make using weather information. How can you guys help us? How can you provide this product and service? And we sit down and we talk about it. We figure out who's going to pay for what and what mission it's going to accomplish and what decision support it's going to accomplish and how it's going to keep people safe. And if we're going to do something different, if it's going to replace something, will it be as safe as what we're replacing? And a lot of the weather products out there are based on safety. Some of them have been built on around crashes. Convective SIGMETs, we didn't do those until there was a crash in New Hope, Georgia in 1977. I think it was Southern Airways Airlines. You couldn't transmit a radar image back then, so the Air Traffic Control Center couldn't see a radar. And they didn't have meteorologists at the control centers then, so pilots went up, the flight went off, and flew right into a mesoscale convective system, one of those big thunderstorm complexes we were talking about yesterday. And they had to make an emergency landing and crashed on a highway in Georgia. And the NTSB came out, and you know, everyone decided, well, we need meteorologists in the control centers, and we need some way to communicate what the meteorologists are seeing on radar. And that's where we developed the convective SIGMET. And really, it hasn't changed much over the last 30 or 40 years. It's a text product. We use VOR navigation points to define an area where there's thunderstorms. And that's designed so that the meteorologist puts the product out, and then a controller who's not a meteorologist can read it to a pilot who's not a meteorologist. And everybody in the chain understands what's going on, what's being talked about, and what the dangers are. So the system's gotten a lot safer from that. So as we look towards changing how we do convective SIGMETs or communicating thunderstorm hazards, we got to remember that we've got a very safe system in progress in effect right now,
and only getting safer,
and we want to make it safer, but we don't certainly want to introduce something that's less safe than we have now.
Yeah, exactly. Do you guys do a lot of experimental behind the scenes and try and figure out, you know, and correct this and tweak it there, and hopefully it comes out well?
Absolutely. We've got an aviation weather test bed in our facility. And the FAA's got a big center in Atlantic City, the Hughes Tech Center, where we can simulate live operations. So from the forecast production process to the controller production process and communication process, we can change those weather inputs and what's being communicated and seeing how it affects the systems, how people can respond to it in near operational situations. Absolutely.
Now, depending on the product, does it take a while to put together something, or do you guys test it just like over 10 years, or what? I guess it kind of varies, but
it does. It you know, we work closely with the research community as well. A lot of universities.
I know UCAR is one of the very
UCAR
large,
is a very big one. Yeah, and they're out in Boulder, and they are tweaking algorithms, and they're kind of they come to us and come to the Weather Service and say, hey, here's what someone at St. Cloud University did some research on, and we think it has a good application to what you guys do with, say, icing. And we'll say, all right, well, let's sit down in our test bed with our forecasters and see how we can apply that to the forecast process. And can we code that up? Can we mention that in the formats we have for the text products or graphical products? Or do we need to redesign a product? And any change that's going to affect the national airspace system from a weather standpoint, we put through a very rigorous safety risk management assessment with the FAA. We get experts from airlines, from expert meteorologists from outside the Weather Service, research. Just about anyone, safety engineers, and we look at this and we say, is this going to introduce a hazard? Is it a high risk, a low risk of a hazard? And then we get expert panels together, and what are we going to do if it does introduce a risk? How are we going to mitigate that?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to educate people. We're going to come out here and talk to people at EAA and tell them about these changes. We've been giving presentations in the Federal Pavilion all week about changes in some of our products. Obviously, the bigger the change, the more we need to communicate that in advance and work with the pilot communities to get that word out. But it's you know, at the end of the day, really, when it comes down to weather, it's all about communication. It's telling people what the weather could be, what their options are, and letting everyone understand that, comprehend that, and make safe decisions.
Now, what are your two newest products that you have put together or have changed?
Well, we mentioned the graphical aeromets.
Okay.
You know, the FAA, as I said, sets requirements and policy for weather products. And for the longest time, they still do. They split up primary versus supplementary products.
Okay.
An aeromet and a SIGMET in the traditional sense is a primary product. And something like an automated model output guidance would be a supplementary product. That means you can look at it to help you fine-tune your decision, but when at the end of the day, you got to go look at the primary product for your official decision making. Well, just earlier this year, the FAA said these graphical aeromets can be a primary product
because they've become so trustworthy.
Trustworthy. They've been proven over years. They've been supplementary and experimental for a number of years. They've gone through the safety risk assessments, and everyone says, yeah, these are safe to use. They're actually a little bit safer than the text aeromets. They give you more information. So now we've got text aeromets and graphical aeromets both out there, and pilots always ask me, well, which one am I supposed to use?
Yeah.
They're both primary products. You use whichever one you like. If you want to use them both together, that's great. If you want to use one or the other. So that was one of our big accomplishments for new products this year. Our webpage, Aviation Digital Data Services, aviationweather.gov, it's pretty well integrated, those two websites. We got QICP certified by the FAA this year, which is Qualified Internet Communications Provider.
And well, that's you're like the main guys now.
Well, there's a lot of private companies that have that certification. Basically, it means that our website meets certain reliability standards, but it allows airlines and other users to use a lot of our website operationally, and it's basically saying that the communications through the website is reliable enough that you can use this operationally. So that's a big advantage. We've made some changes to some of our convective products, our collaborative convective forecast product. And we've got a lot of changes coming down the road, which we can talk about later this week.
Exactly. Well, I guess, as you probably can see, it's cleared out a little bit here, and we are about to start the air show pretty soon, since that system off to our east or off to our west has made it off to the south and cleared out for everyone to start this air show. And
all right.
Thank you for listening to EAA Radio, and we will start our air show shortly.